Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today. John Hansen will be with you starting tomorrow and the rest of the week. And Steve Bertrand will be back next week with you. Lots to do on the program today. We're going to be taking a look at some retirement planning advice and hear all about that. And we're going to take a look at the interest rates, given that they are probably about to rise again. So we're going to take a look at that. But right now we're joined by John Najarian, who's a contributor at CNBC and co-founder of Najarian Family Office, to talk with us about the latest market news. Hi, John. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Amy.
Well, as we were just hearing from our own Orion Samuelson, it doesn't seem like there's a ton happening at the moment, but it also seems like a ton is about to happen as far as the markets go.
Yeah, or at least, I mean, it's pretty much built in that we're going to get a rate increase tomorrow. It'll be the second of the year, and that's according to both Fed funds futures and the Fed surveys. Are both predicting a 90-some-odd percent chance of a quarter of 1% increase. That'll come tomorrow at 1 o'clock Central Time, 2 o'clock Eastern. So, like you say, there is a ton of things that are going to be happening, and certainly interest rates for the trillion-dollar market that they are a big thing. But right now, today, it's a little bit of a reaction on the defense stocks. They're easing because of the summit in Singapore, of course.
Right. Certainly. It seems like there's a lot of conversation around that. And, you know, just kind of taking a look at a lot of financial conversations on social media a little bit earlier, it seems like there's a little bit of we'll believe it when we see it kind of conversation behind a lot of that.
Yeah, that's understandable, of course, given the history of the grandfather and father of Kim Jong-un and the efforts that they have made or attempted to make or perhaps pretended to make when they were trying to make nice with various world leaders. But I think this time we're in the first inning. No one would say we're much past that. And this was really just shake hands, see how each other, how the two leaders dealt with each other, and then try to get to some agreement, Amy, perhaps in the second or third meeting. But I don't think many of us held out hope that there would be a denuclearization agreement coming out of this one.
Right, certainly not. Certainly no shortage of internet memes, though, based on photos and photo ops from the meeting so far. I think a lot of eyes are also looking to the AT&T Time Warner merger and how that's going to have an impact, what that's going to look like, and how the market will react.
Yeah, for sure. The results should be right around the close of business of the stock exchanges, not the full close of business day. But we're expecting at around 3 o'clock Central Time that we'll hear from the people who are looking into whether or not they will let these two giants merge. I would say that it's got to be at least 70-30 that the answer is yes. But there is that chance, and maybe it's as much as that 30% that I mentioned, that they would say no. And if that's the case, it'll change a whole bunch of calculus, including what Comcast might or might not do with Disney and Fox because of what's going on with, you know, bidding for the Fox assets.
Right, right. It certainly seems like that's the one of the big wild cards, and that is not only just the decision, but then the kind of key players around it and what their reactions and next moves will be. Certainly, a story that's perhaps flying under the radar, especially around all the summit news, that I think is really interesting, is that's watching Hawaiian Airlines stock and how that's been moving, although perhaps not as much as we would have thought, given the natural disasters and how much volcanic activity is happening in Hawaii. You'd think that would be a very immediate reaction, but it seems like it was a little bit slower, but nonetheless reaction.
Yeah, and it's actually an extremely well-run airline as well. So that's one of the reasons people like that and Alaska Air is that they're so efficient at how they manage their inventory. So perhaps even with the problems that, as you said, the island is clearly suffering, and probable cutbacks from tourism, at least in some areas, not so much on Oahu, of course, but certainly to the islands that are affected by the lava. There is nonetheless a very efficient operator that is perhaps being judged on the moves that it's being because of those increased lava flows and so forth.
Right, certainly. And so what other stories should we be watching today, in your opinion, since you're watching so many of them all simultaneously?
Sure. I'll say Tesla, because the stock has just made a moonshot in the last 2 weeks after that horrible conference call where Musk basically called out analysts for being boring or asking him stupid questions. And then just a week later or 2 weeks later, when he virtually broke down on stage after they gave him the positive vote to continue on as chairman and CEO, and he got all teared up about it. I think he's been under a lot of pressure, but the people under pressure in the stock are the shorts, because the stock has gone from 280 to now 350 with hardly a look back over the last 2 or 3 weeks. So that's one of the big outperformers in the markets.
That is a really interesting, you know, just everything around Tesla is so interesting. Elon Musk is an interesting character and very, very polarizing. And I think that really translates to how people feel about the company, because he's such a polarizing character.
Very true. And, you know, right after that earnings call, when he came out and basically said that the analysts were idiots, he started his own. He wanted to create a fake news a site that would call people out for what he was saying were fake news about his company and others, of course. Now, he's somewhat backed off on that, or at least he's not pursuing it as much as he's pursuing the other projects, which right. are pretty big projects like SpaceX and Tesla. But he's certainly a guy that has no shortage of great ideas and vision.
And no shortage of moxie to back them all up, indeed. All
and
right.
some money, too.
Well, that never hurt a good idea, is throwing some dollars at it for sure. John Najarian, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Amy.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today. John Hansen will be with you starting tomorrow and the rest of the week. And then Steve will be back with you next week. Lots to do on the program today. We're joined now by Taylor Tepper, who is an analyst at Bankrate.com, who is here to tell us something we kind of already maybe knew, and that is a lot of us don't know how much money that we need to retire. And a lot of that has to do with which generation group we're in. Taylor, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
So talk us through this, because it seems like different age groups really have different expectations about retirement planning and how much they think they need. Of course, I went right to my own age group when I looked at this and thought, oh, well, that's not good news. And so talk us through, if you would.
Yeah. So basically, we did a study that found that 61% of Americans don't know how much they're going to need for retirement. And like you said, it's not surprising, but it's shocking. There's a retirement crisis going on. No one really seems to want to address it. It has to do with a lot of factors that have been going on for 20, 30 years, but that has resulted in people not having enough to save. And if you look at some reports, about half of current households are at risk of having a lower standard of living when they actually retire. So it's not good. It's not good. Yes, so different age groups do have different expectations about how much they'll need. It's kind of hard because most people just didn't know. So like 69% of millennials didn't know how much they're going to need. Excuse me. But for older generations, they weren't particularly well-versed in what they're going to need either. So about 56% of Gen Xers, a similar portion of baby boomers, and the silent generation didn't know how much they're going to need. So there's a lot of ignorance going on about people's personal financial goals, and it's not good.
And despite maybe having questions or not being clear on how much is needed, it seemed also like different age groups had kind of a different number in their head for what they thought they might need. I'm looking in particular, of course, my own age group is Gen X, and so I look right at that, and that guess comes in significantly higher, almost double than what boomers said, and still higher than what millennials said.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. I'm not really sure why that is, because, you know, it's not as if millennials will, because of inflation and higher costs in retirement, and if people continue to live longer, will probably need more than Gen Xers. I think that's more of a reflection of like how much people are spending now, and Gen Xers, who we sort of rate as between 38 and 53, are sort of, you know, at their most unhappy as adults. They're spending, they're working long hours, they have kids to raise, maybe they have parents to support, they have more expenses coming out. So the sort of mental accounting they do puts that number higher for them than maybe for millennials who are just starting out in their career, or boomers who are sort of winding things down. So I think that's more of a reflection of people's current, you know, outgoing costs rather than what they're going to need when they actually stop working when they turn in their 60s and 70s.
Yeah, my guess was, I was like, well, we're kind of cynical as a group, Gen Xers. So maybe we're just like, we're all like self-sufficient to a fault. I figured like, well, okay, I can't count on anybody else. I better just figure this out for myself.
Exactly. Yeah, you're the middle child. You're the middle child of America.
We are the middle child. That's true. So what else stuck out to you about this data, and what surprised you about it?
Sure. So about a quarter of people go to personal financial advisors for help. Another 21% go to families and friends. Only about 11% go online for information. That it's sort of the fact that it's so fractured, I think, is really interesting, that there isn't sort of a holistic or systematic way that people find out information. It's sort of piecemeal. And I think another member of the, you know, shocking but not surprising bit was Social Security. So 61% said they expected little to no Social Security help when they retire, which is just not borne out by reality. You know, right now, about half of retirees count on half of their income from Social Security. A quarter of retirees count on 90% of their income from Social Security. Social Security is going to be really important. And if millennials and Gen Xers don't have enough saved now, and you know, Gen Xers, as I'm sure you know, were hit by a couple of recessions along the way, maybe three if you go back to the 90s, early 90s, then you are absolutely going to need Social Security when you retire. It's going to be a big factor of your income. And the fact that there's such ennui about what Social Security is going to mean to me is a little frustrating.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's always been kind of a narrative about it of like, don't depend on it, but you may have to. And, you know, I think people have a lot of both ambivalence and uncertainty and fear around Social Security money.
Exactly. Exactly. I think you hit it right on the head. And, you know, if it were the case that people really thought that Social Security was going away, you would think it would have the effect of pushing people to save more and having more assets in their 401k or their IRA or wherever. But that's not the case. We're not really seeing that much increased saving behavior, especially by millennials and younger savers. And so it makes me think that people think about it like they think about student loans. It's just this big thing above their heads that they can't really, you know, affect or get any sort of context around. And I think that deludes and hurts the conversation about Social Security, which is a really important conversation, especially with the trustee report that just came out. So I think it leads to a lack of financial understanding and a lack of cultivated discussion in the financial, you know, realm. And that's to the detriment of Social Security, because people need to know that Social Security is going to be very important for them. Talk to your grandparents about that. And so you should, you know, act like it's going to be, and not sort of affect this sort of persona of, you know, it's not going to be there for me, I don't care.
Taylor Tepper, analyst at Bankrate.com, thanks so much for being with us today.
Of course, thank you.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today. John Hansen will be with you tomorrow and the rest of the week, and then Steve will be back with you next week. We are joined now by Roger Teng, editor at CNET, who, you know what, there's always really good stuff at CNET and always very interesting things. But this first story that I would love to talk with you about, Roger, is so fascinating because we think about canine units being about finding bombs and drugs and things like that. But CNET has a piece right now, and if you follow me on Twitter, I'll be sure and tweet this out after the program so you can all read it for yourselves. But Roger, you have a story right now about how these elite canine units are sniffing out evidence for cybercrime conviction, which is so fascinating to think that how sensitive their little snouts are.
Yeah, this is a surprise to me too, when this was first pitched at me. But yeah, the idea that the dogs can actually sniff out thumb drives, they can sniff out SD cards. The trick is there's a chemical compound that all electronics use, and that's shorts TPO. You don't really need to know the long name for it, but essentially it is. It's a chemical found in any electronics, and these dogs are specifically trained to sniff them out. And you really kind of have to be an elite dog for this. They say about 1 in 50 kind of make the cut. These are all trained to kind of sniff out evidence of cyber crimes, and that's really where a lot of these crimes are happening now.
That's so interesting. And as you note in the story, it is perhaps not as new as we thought, maybe just something we weren't talking about, because there was a Labrador retriever named Bear that was part of the Jared Fogel case. Mm-hmm. That I think that was kind of a footnote of that case that not many people knew about.
Yeah, one of the key things is the dog was able to sniff out the hard drive containing some of that illicit material. And that was one of the reasons why Jared was put away.
Well, and you also get in this story, you get the very wonderful line that is very key, and that is, that's because Harley is a very good dog. So anytime you say very good dog in a story, it is a story I like. So I definitely wanted to talk about that one. Very, very interesting. What good dogs indeed. Other stories right now happening that you've got going at CNET is kind of the latest with E3. There's a lot of eyes on that and just kind of seeing what's happening and seeing what that's going to mean in consumer markets.
Yeah, well, this is a time in the video game industry where we're not seeing a lot of new hardware. You're not seeing like a new Xbox or PlayStation, but what you are seeing is a lot of new games. In fact, a lot of recognizable names, games like Halo, The Last of Us, Kingdom Hearts. These are games that are near and dear to many gamers' hearts. And the fact that they're getting sequels and spin-offs and just new additions to their franchises, that's a big deal. That's really one of the key themes of the show this year.
Yeah. Also on CNET, you have a piece about how Wish could be competing with Walmart. And I know, retail habits, that's a topic we talk about a lot on this program, just because as we've seen more brick-and-mortar retailers move into the online space, and then now the online space is really so very competitive, especially with Amazon and Walmart, this other player seems to suddenly, it seems like it's kind of flown under the radar for a while and suddenly seems a lot more competitive than perhaps people originally thought.
Absolutely. It's really come out of nowhere to become this kind of quietly successful business. And what it really does is it connects you to Chinese vendors directly, basically allowing you to buy super cheap products like $2 sunglasses, and it's the top app on Android, and the company told CNET actually exclusively that last year this was the first time they hit $1 billion in revenue, and they expect to double that this year. Obviously a far cry from the sales volume of an Amazon or Walmart, but they're definitely on this tremendous growth trajectory.
Yeah, definitely. And I think where a lot of people first maybe, anyway, people outside of like the retail space anyway, first maybe started hearing about Wish is the unending stream of tweets about Wish ads.
Yes, there's that. There's the fact that the Wish logo is also adorned on Laker jerseys for this past season.
Right.
That's what caught my attention initially. It's quietly becoming a thing.
Yeah, it's definitely quietly becoming a thing. The first thing I saw about it was an ad that had really, really sparked a lot of feelings in a lot of women. It was an ad for tights, and a lot of people were suddenly tweeting about it. And I thought, well, what is this ad that so many people are angry about tights? And indeed, it was controversy. So, it was like controversially done. So it was interesting to see that one. And that's how it first got on my radar. And then now I feel like I'm regularly seeing these like a stream of tweets for what strange Wish ad is happening right now. now.
Right.
The latest. Okay. And then, of course, we cannot not talk about net neutrality. That is such a topic. It is such a big topic. And so many people have been talking about it for months that I think there's almost a little bit of fatigue about it, despite its supreme importance.
Absolutely. Yesterday was a fairly critical day. This is the day that the FCC's rollback of these rules took effect. Now, this is basically a month-long process. There was definitely a battle to kind of keep net neutrality alive. Right now, there are no rules to govern how the open Internet works, and so we're kind of out in the wild, wild west now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of consumers are just sort of concerned with, okay, what's this going to look like for me? What does that mean next? And I think a lot of content providers are really asking a lot of questions, too.
Absolutely. Especially for consumers, I would just to reassure them, at least in the near term, I wouldn't expect any significant changes. But it's really over the long term. The fact that these companies have the flexibility to introduce new business models and things that may not be the friendliest to consumers is sort of a lingering long-term concern. But at least in the short term, you can't expect none of these companies are going to make any moves for fear of the negative publicity.
Right. I think that's, of course, such an important thing always. But I think especially now when one screen grabbed tweet and it's all over. It's all done.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, Roger Chang, editor at CNET, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. And of course, after the program, I'll be sure and tweet out all of these stories that we just talked about so that you can read them for yourselves. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. In business, you must remember, you can't win them all. And that goes the same for the one and only Warren Buffett. 18 years ago, Berkshire Hathaway invested in the Chicago-based USG Corp. But despite the blessing from the Oracle of Omaha, bankruptcy plagued USG and led to a, quote, disappointing investment. You can't win every bet, but one thing you can bet on is a more efficient and green future. And right now, we're seeing that overwhelmingly with the design of new buildings. And a brand new 12-story building is coming to Fulton Market that's going to be based off the passive house standards that makes it 75% more efficient than other buildings. The thought and design that goes into these standards is made for longevity and could be the next disruptor because, think about it, they may not need those big expensive AC and energy packages. If more of these buildings go up down the road, that's a lot of money that could be shifted from one industry to another. Fulton Market? More like Disruptorville. Okay, maybe not. That's your Wintrust Business Minute on WGN Radio.
Back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today. We're joined now by Timothy Dewey, who is co-director of undergraduate studies at University of Oregon and director of the Oregon Economic Forum. Timothy, hi, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the air.
Certainly. Thanks for being with us today. Well, the Federal Reserve is poised to raise interest rates for the second time this year. I think there's a lot of conversation around that, a lot of speculation around that, and kind of some other things swirling around the market today. Talk us through it, if you would.
Well, the Federal Reserve is almost certainly going to raise interest rates tomorrow. They're really looking at an outlook for this year that's matching pretty well what their forecast expected, if not a little bit better. And so that keeps them on track for raising interest rates this month, and I suspect again in September as well.
And then we, of course, have to pull in the unemployment rate and have a conversation around that, and which I think that number is so important to just say and say and say accurately, because I think that's one of the first numbers that starts getting, I don't want to say manipulated, but certainly stretched and changed a little bit when we start talking politics.
Well, that's true. I mean, the way we define unemployment from the Bureau of Labor Statistics point of view is simply the number of people who are unemployed, say they're looking for work and haven't found it yet, relative to the size of the labor force. And so, for example, we don't include necessarily the underemployed in that number. The underemployed being maybe people have dropped out of the labor force, have stopped looking for work, maybe those that are looking for full-time work and only have part-time work. This is actually been a very important issue for the Federal Reserve. They've been willing to let the unemployment rate drop lower than they think is likely in the long term, partly because they think there's this large number of underemployed persons out there, and that a hot labor market can try to pull them more fully into the overall workforce.
And so as we, you know, as we're looking through the next couple of weeks anyway, what other things can we expect to be cued off of the interest rates?
Well, I think what we're looking for in this report is not just the interest rate change itself, but also we're also looking for what changes in the language. It's widely expected that they're going to change language regarding the forward guidance that they use. So basically telling markets that they expect interest rates to be low for a long period of time. They're going to pull back on some of that language. They're going to change their forecasts. And then when we look beyond that, we're really thinking about how well are those, does the economic data really match up to those forecasts? And I think we're particularly interested to see how fast growth is in the second quarter. And I think it is growing at a fairly fast pace. And does that mean that unemployment is going to sink into a danger zone more quickly than the Federal Reserve expects?
Right, right. And of course, then we're looking at the summit happening. We're looking at tariffs. We're looking at Canada. We're looking at China. We're looking at a lot of places. And yet it still seems like a lot of people are just kind of going, let's just see what happens, which seems almost atypical. It seems like things are usually a little more reactive.
Yeah, so we look around the global landscape, you can certainly see reasons for concern or risk. So you mentioned the tariffs, for example. There's questions about emerging market crisis. There's been challenges with the European Union lately, especially around Italy, and again, questions about whether the euro will be able to stay together. So there's a whole host of issues that are surrounding the landscape right now. But when we look at really what are the core issues driving economic activity right now, they seem to be fairly steady and solid growth in the U.S., and that really for right now has been dominating the picture. That's the thing we know is happening, whereas all these other things are risks. And so I think that we're discounting some of those risks just because of the strength of the underlying U.S. economy.
Timothy Dewey, co-director of undergraduate studies at University of Oregon and director of the Oregon Economic Forum. Thanks so much for being with us today and talking us through all of this.
My pleasure. Anytime.